Welcome to Voice Rising with Kara Johnstad. Enjoy weekly conversations with leading luminaries, pioneering visionaries, singers, poets, musicians, and sound healers as we explore the profound role our voice plays on the path to self-realization and global enlightenment. The internationally acclaimed singer, composer, author, healer, recording artist, voice expert, creator of Voice Your Essence, and founder of the School of Voice, Kara Johnstad, uses her extraordinary spiritual gifts to empower others. Everything in this world vibrates. Everything has a frequency. A pioneer in the field of voice work and transformational songwriting. Her breakthrough methods are helping thousands of people worldwide fine-tune their body-mind-spirit system and unlock the energetic frequencies of limitless creativity, health, and abundance. Share your voice, ask your questions, join in the conversation. Receive life-changing, positive transformation and rise together to create a sound world. And here's your host, Kara Johnstad.
Hello, everybody. Welcome. Today, I am in the studio with writing guru and NPR commentator Nancy Slonim Erany. And Nancy is the author of the best-selling book, Writing from Your Heart, Tapping the Power of Your Inner Voice, and her approach to creative writing is a path to healing the self. So welcome, Nancy, to the Voice Rising Show.
Oh, thank you so much.
It's beautiful to have you here with us today. Nancy, I have read your book. I've carried your book with me. It's wonderful. It's deep. It's funny. You guide people back to finding their true voices. What is your advice if someone feels totally stuck? They feel that they don't even know where they left their true voice. They're just trying to get through sadness and grief and all those things that are, you know, a little bit heavy. How should they even begin?
Well, one of the things that that's really, really important is to get the validation from the outside, because it's really hard. You're writing in a vacuum. You don't really know if you're good or not. And you get yourself into a group. You know, when I first started getting published, I was invited into the writing group in my town, all fancy schmancy writers. They were all published. I was so ecstatic. I hung up the phone after they invited me and I went screaming through the house. Oh my God, I have to lose 15 pounds by Wednesday. I'd like to point out right now, you do not have to lose 15 pounds by Wednesday or ever. It has nothing
to
do with writing. And then I said, oh my God, what should I wear? What does a writer wear? Well, I said, a writer wears black. Actually, you can wear orange. You can wear paisley. It doesn't matter. And I got there, and these women had been meeting for years. And I was like new, I was going to say new meat, new blood, new something to them. And there was a pre-designated reader. They had told her to bring something. And she read her piece, and it was absolutely stunning. It was beautiful. And when she finished reading, the first person in the room said, you know, Harriet, I felt that your characters were really rather one-dimensional. I mean, I couldn't relate to them. And I sat there with a stomachache, and one by one, everyone in that room told her something that was wrong with the piece. I am not kidding. And then afterwards, they had a dessert table with peach cobbler. It was unbelievable, fabulous. Thick, thick crust, real peaches, unbelievable. And I kind of glommed, and I socialized with these people that weren't nice. And then I got home, and my husband greeted me at the door, and he said, so how was it? And I said, oh, my God, the peach cobbler was fabulous. He said, no, babe. And I said, mean-spirited. They're not only are they mean, they're wrong. I mean, this woman wrote a great piece. And he said, are you going back? And I said, yeah, I'm going back. They're my mentors. They're my teachers. This was 40 years ago. And I went again. And the next week, exactly the same thing happened. Another woman wrote a fabulous piece. It was really beautifully powerful. She finishes reading. And the first person who spoke must have had her jaw wired shut by the same surgeon, because she sounded like this. And she said, you know, Stephanie, I really have to admire your perseverance. I mean, you just don't quit, do you, dear? I'm not kidding. She said,
oh, my goodness.
Quit, do you, dear? I remember going out to the car and writing it down. I could not believe a person would say that to another human. And then they had this amazing blueberry thing. It was so great. I ate, I socialized, I smiled phonily, and I got home and with blue teeth. And my husband said, so? And I said, oh, my God, these people should not be here. They should not be allowed near any writers. They should write a cookbook. The blueberry thing was delicious. And he said, are you going back? And I said, yeah, I'm reading next time. And the next time I was there in the hot seat, and I read the best thing I had ever written because I was too nervous to write something that was in process. They did such a job on me. I'm still stuttering. And then there was Apple Crisp, and I knew I had to get out of there because I was about to cry. And
yeah,
I took a paper plate. I don't like eating off paper plates, and a plastic spoon. I don't like eating with plastic. And I put some Apple Crisp in the paper plate. I got into the car. I took a bite, and I couldn't swallow. And I did not write for 2 years. Nothing. I couldn't write. Even though I knew they were wrong, I did not write. When I started my own workshop, the very first workshop, the same thing happened. People were critical. People told each other what was wrong. I had no idea how to facilitate a group. I sat there helpless, watching people's faces get constricted, watching their shoulders go up, watching the writing get generic and boring. And then the next workshop, I sat them all down, new people, and I said, look, I've only done this once, and I've learned something. Creativity requires safety. You will be safe here. I have one rule, and that is when you finish reading, we will tell you what we loved. So get yourself into a group. Tell the people the rule is when I finish reading, when anyone finishes reading, let's get people juiced. Let's get people inspired. Let's tell each other what we loved. We don't need the criticism in the beginning. It's the embryonic stage. It's the beginning. The other thing, if you're stuck and you're not able to get a word out of you, I say go buy some crayons. Get those gorgeous, colorful crayons. Get some watercolor paper and do some art because you're not an artist. So you can smoosh that stuff around. It'll look gorgeous no matter what, and it'll open the creative vein, and then you can go back to the words. But you really need to be in a safe place, and you do need feedback. You need other people to say you're brilliant. And you know what? Hyperbolic praise is very, very important.
Yeah, beautiful. I mean, they do really say that we draw before we can even make the letters. So that's probably a very good bridge to remember to pick up some crayons.
Yeah,
Exactly.
Watercolor, anything that will look good no matter what you do. And bridge is the perfect word. You just chose the perfect word. Because that's what
I mean, you did remind me of a story that I heard, which was Jean Houston was saying how she hated to write, and now she's bringing out a book, you know, one book a year, and she said, yeah, but I love to cook. And I thought, what was that? She's like, I hate to write, but I love to cook. And then she would say that cooking somehow was very instinctual, and when she would stare at this page and get totally stuck and dumbfounded, and she knew she had a deadline, she would say, okay, what spice does this need? Does it need more cinnamon, or does it need more, you know, whatever? And that's how she managed. And she'd write this one chapter, kind of dragging herself to write it, but she'd write this one chapter, and then at the end of the year she had 10 chapters, and then she'd give it to her editor, and then she had her book. And I thought, well, that's a fun way, right? If they would have commented as well as they made their peach cobbler or their apple crisp,
right?
Then it might have been a different story.
You just have to find another way to express where you don't have this heavy expectation, like I have to write and I have to get it done by Tuesday and I have to get that book out. It's too much pressure and it's not fun. It's got to be joyful. And, you know, when I first sent something out right in the beginning, I sent it to an editor who called me on the phone and said, I want to take you to lunch and talk about your manuscript. Nobody had ever called anything I wrote a manuscript. This was very exciting. And he met me at a restaurant called Butterflies, which is so interesting because butterflies, metamorphosis, life-changing.
Right.
It was a life-changing meeting. And I walked in, and he had my manuscript on the table. We introduce ourselves. And he takes a pen, and he circles the whole top third, and he goes, this is shit. I'm not kidding. He said those words.
Wow.
And, I, and I'm, And I'm thinking to myself, why did he call me and tell me that he wanted to talk to me? I can't believe what he just said to me. And then he took his pen and he circled the whole bottom third and he said, this is garbage. And I'm like,
oh my God,
I can't believe this guy is saying this to me. And then he takes his pen and he circles the whole center and he goes, this is gold. This is your voice. And he goes to the top and he goes, here you are quoting Shakespeare. Nancy, everybody quotes Shakespeare. I don't need, Shakespeare's great, of course, but I don't need that. And then he points at the bottom again and he goes, and here you are quoting Woody Allen. I love Woody Allen. Woody Allen's funny, but I don't need that. This is you right here. This is your voice. And I'm like ready to cry. And I said, well, what's my voice again? He said, It's authentic. It's real. I would like to know this person. You have strung words together that I have never heard strung together before. Take the chance of sounding like you, everybody. Take the chance of saying, this is who I am. This is how I feel. This is what happened to me. Don't protect us. Don't worry about anybody thinking who you are, that you're weird, or I can't believe she wrote that. Just be who you are. And honestly, it will flow out once you take the chance of saying, you know what? I'm going to say this is who I am. This is what happened to me. And use your language, your rhythms, your story. So there you go.
Perfect. So that's the honesty that we long for when we read and also when we write. That.
Yeah, but it's what we respond to.
That's what we respond to. Nancy, there are two wonderful P words. P, not for pretty or perfect, but for process and product. And most writing courses and most creativity courses, I, as a singer, know this constant thing for production and performance and production and product, you know, product creation, right? But you put a lot of emphasis, and I can only agree with you. That's why I have you on the show, and I really loved reading your book. I was laughing and crying and really enjoyed the whole ride. And but you talk about process. And you talk about the importance of process, about why we need to focus on that process if we want to be living a creative life. So what does process mean? Do you, as a writer, never think of the deadlines and the other things? Or is it a balancing act between process and also knowing, oh, I have to complete something out there, maybe, besides a peach cobbler? Yeah.
When you're thinking product, there's a lot of pressure, if you don't mind another P. But, you know, when I married my husband, who is about process with everything that he does. And I kind of grew up in a household where there was an expectation that you should start out as an expert. And if you weren't good at something, don't do it. My sister and I have talked about this 100 times. It's like if you're not good, if you're not a natural, if you're not good immediately, they were not about practice. They were not about process. And then I marry my husband, and he takes Suzuki violin with our kids. And he would come home with this little violin, and he would be practicing Twinkle, going, ar. And I remember thinking, doesn't he get it? He's not good. Why is he continuing doing this? He walked around with that violin screeching for about 2 months. One night, 2 o'clock in the morning, he wakes me up. He's at the foot of the bed. He goes, Babe, I made a breakthrough. And he played Twinkle perfectly. And I remember sitting up in bed and literally crying. I said, wait a minute. So you started out not knowing how to do it. Then you sounded horrible. Then you got a little better. And then you actually sounded horrible again. And then you got a little better. And this is what happened? How could I have reached this age and not known this? I just could not believe that I had never seen. He was a model for you stick to it. I have a friend who makes gorgeous jewelry, and she goes, crazy glue. And you know she doesn't use crazy glue, the 24 karat gold. Crazy glue your butt to the chair. Just sit there until something comes out. Draw hearts, write a letter to your dead father, learn how to write, do perspective lines. But something is going to come to you. And the best stuff is if somebody says something, or you hear an argument, or you're eavesdropping and you hear something, or you've turned off the television because you couldn't take it again, start the piece with the line you couldn't bear listening to another minute.
That's a very good tip.
Could open
talk to
the
us
door.
About, yeah, you're talking about just sitting there. Oops, we are taking a break, I guess, at 8:20, and then we will be back in a few moments.
The cutting edge of conscious radio, Om Times Radio, IOM FM.
Om Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. Connect at omtimes.com. Om Times, creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Hi, this is David Strickle. I'm excited to share my brand new show, The Stream of David Live, right here on Om Times Radio. Each week, I'll have exciting guests, and I'll channel the eternal wisdom of The Stream, a group of non-physical entities whose teachings have transformed lives all over the world. So join us for an uplifting hour each Monday at 5 p.m. Eastern. That's The Stream of David Live right here on Om Times Radio.
With happy clients all over the world, Kara Johnstad knows that your voice is the missing link to more authenticity, abundance, creativity, and health. An internationally acclaimed voice expert, Kara's breakthrough methods have helped thousands of people successfully heal their voice wounds and extinguish the story of self-doubt and shyness forever. Join in group trainings, attend online sessions, schedule one-on-one time, and invite Kara to work with your organization and community. Get started today. Go to www.karajohnstad.com and receive a special guided meditation designed to fine-tune your inner voice and welcome you on the voice journey.
A social distancing tip.
Putting distance between yourself and others is critical to slowing the spread of coronavirus. So here are ways to stay in contact without the physical contact part. Call, send a text, set up a video conference, post on social media, dedicate a song on the radio. If you have symptoms of fever, dry cough, and shortness of breath, call your healthcare provider before going to their office. For more info, visit coronavirus.gov.
Let's all do our part because we're all hashtag alone together. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to Voice Rising. I'm Kara Johnson, and today with me in studio is the best-selling author Nancy Slonim Erany, and we are talking about crazy gluing our butt to the chair until the inspiration basically arrives. And Nancy, I wanted to ask you, because sometimes it can take a long time, right? So what about muses? How can we call the inspiration? Are there... You know, that last line of something that we just heard is a great jumping off point. Every artist needs inspiration. Is there a way to seduce or kidnap the muse to help us so we don't sit too long?
Fall in love.
Yeah. That's no, my trick.
That does work. It really does. 'Cause you're on top of the world. And the other thing is break up with somebody because then your heart's broken and then you're constantly wanting to make art somehow because you've got to get it out of your body. I mean, I'm a very big believer that all the sorrow is locked into your body and you got to get it out onto the page because you're going to have a bit. It's in your pancreas. It's in your liver. It's in right. Your heart. You know, you can't. I don't know that you can call and arrange to have a muse show up, although... there are people that light a candle and sit and actually talk to an entity and say, I need you, please. We have our angels around us. We have guides around us. You can call on them. I am really, the muse for me is usually something that has happened that I've overheard or somebody's saying something to someone and I don't speak up then, but then I mull it over and it's finally, it just emerges on the page. You know, we were taking a walk. Somebody yelled at somebody else because they weren't wearing a mask. And I thought, oh my God, this is the COVID police going on now. We really have to be more gentle with each other. And I ended up writing a piece about it because I thought this is not what we're going to be doing right now. Right now, this is when we need extra kindness. And we're going to have to learn how to express ourselves without our mouths. We're going to have our eyes tell a story, you know?
Yeah, we're very good. I mean, I think that at least in Berlin, you know, there's a lot of division in the States. And in Berlin, there are people that are allowed also not to wear masks if they're, for example, asthmatic or if they're having problems breathing. So everybody is wearing a mask. But there are people that might have medical conditions that make that difficult. And so I think before we start screaming at each other, we can practice that gentle kindness because, you know, there are, of course, it's good to unite in what we choose, but we also have to remember there are people that have medical reasons for not wearing masks. So,
exactly.
Good job. You say in your book, and I'm going to quote you here, if you can't write for your own little life, write for your larger than life, right, for the world, right, as an act of giving your authenticity, your integrity, your one-of-a-kind originality. It is your willingness to begin again and again and again that becomes the art of giving, right, as a practice, a meditation, as a gift to yourself. Does that help us when we get stuck to think of a bigger picture or a larger way of giving back?
Definitely. I'm married to a guy who's passionate about the planet, and he has been really tough to argue with about all the ways that we're driving SUVs and we're using up resources. And over the years at dinner parties, he's made people not be able to have their dessert. And because he's very forthright, he's very, big voice about it. And we were invited to a wedding in France, and the wedding invitation is the most gorgeous thing I ever saw in my entire life, and I was, like, dying to go. But he sits down and tells me how much CO2 the airplane is going to put out if I fly to France. So there are two ways that I was able to write the piece. I was able to write about how I wanted to go, and I love these two guys that are getting married, and how it's going to be the most gorgeous, expensive, beautiful wedding in the entire world, and yet then I get the information that my husband wants me to get out there into the world. So it's two people arguing about not being able to go to France, and I get all of his larger-than-life, larger-world issues onto the page. So I'm educating people. At the same time, I'm being vulnerable and showing that I'm an asshole because I don't care about the planet. I just want to go to the wedding. So you can educate and you can get some really important information out there. If you're doing it in a personal essay, if you're lecturing and you're the expert, you push me away. But if you're vulnerable and you're willing to say, I'm not perfect, but I know somebody who is, then you weave the two pieces of information in that way. I'm a real person. I'm not great, but he is, and you pay attention to the facts. So I get his larger than life world issues on the page all the time.
Very good. Let's dive a little bit into presence and the power now. Everything, you were saying that before, that sorrow, that we carry it even in our pancreas, everything is recorded in our cells. And that includes not only sorrow, but the very first time we rode a bike, the very first time we bit into a banana, the very first kiss. The first time we visited the ocean, right? And sometimes the older we get, we've eaten so many bananas, and we, if we were lucky, had a few more than one kiss, that everything becomes kind of bland, or we don't see it. So how, we don't feel it anymore, right? So how can we return to that place? I mean, you were even talking about now, your husband's talking about climate change, climate crisis. I mean, we are numbed out of media. We have a climate that's dying. We have a planet that's dying. We have fires in California in the moment. We have a pandemic, which is global, right? And yet we're absorbing these stories and so numb that we're even allowing the television or radio to go almost 24/7 flipping through our social media with really stories that would, where we'd normally just run out on the streets and hug each other. Is there a way, is writing a bridge to help us feel again and be present in the moment and allow not only the sorrow that's slumbered in our, you know, tucked away in our thighs or our behind our belly button, but to really bring us back to that place of specialness, you know, the first, to really take a, I'm looking for the word here, but like to see again the magical thing that's behind a sunset or the moon or.
Yeah, you're so articulate. I could tell you're a great writer. Your questions are like good writing.
Oh, good. Yeah, that's on my bucket list. I actually, you know, the funny thing is I'm always coaching, but I did see that you were doing an online Tuesday morning writing course.
Yeah.
And I was gonna try to figure out how to take it because I was like, I actually love this approach to process, honesty, and just trying to become more real. So yes, I up until now I've written a lot of wonderful songs and books are on my list. But it's kind of like I wanted to ask you, how do we reclaim our innocence where we're living in a society where many people are even expecting almost that everything is going to fall apart or everything is falling apart?
I think you got to hang out with young people, really young people, like 7 and 9, and hang out with them. Not just babysit for them, but spend time with them, and because it will bring you back to the joy, the innocence. My mother said when my kid was 3, she was reading to him. She had varicose veins, and she was in shorts, and he was on her lap. And he said, "Grandma, how come you have all that Japanese writing on your legs?"
Wow.
So that's the kind of stuff that if you hang out with little kids, they bring you into the moment because no one has ever said that before. And they're original. They're originals and they're innocent. And you can recognize innocence and it can maybe trigger, "Oh my God, I need this. I need to be around someone that's not jaded. I need to hang out with somebody who is seeing everything for the first time." Because you're right. We're particularly numb right now. We have to be. It's too much. It's overwhelming. Everybody is just done. They're done. So I that's really one way. I mean, I have a 10-year-old grandchild, and it's a ball. You know, I'm very lucky that I get to hang out with him and his friends, and they're like, you know, they're teaching me. That's the other thing. You have to know that these little ones are your teachers. You're not doing anything except sucking up their innocence again and reminding yourself. Yeah. And you're right. The banana line was brilliant. You know, the first banana you remember and the 500th one, you go, "Oh yeah, banana," you don't even notice it. Well, I know you're not supposed to say this on the radio, and I know that you'll probably have to take it out, but I started smoking pot when I was 30-something. I don't recommend it for 9-year-olds or maybe even 17-year-olds. I don't know who should start and who shouldn't, but it's plant medicine to me. I do it infrequently, but when I do it, it honestly does bring me into the moment, and it is like a medicine. And how can I recommend it when there's so many people in trouble with discipline and addiction? But that is it. You know, every spiritual practice has used some kind of alternative substance to bring them into that spiritual moment, and that is the now. And for me, you know, it works. And I when I don't do it, I'm working very hard at being present. But when I do it, I zoom right into my heart. But that's, you know, and I'll tell you something. I teach college sometimes, and I have to say it. You know, I'm not. And now Massachusetts is legal, so I don't have to, like, blush when I say it. But anyway.
There's a lot of plant healing. And, I mean, I just got back from Amsterdam a few weeks ago, and there you would feel right at home.
There you go.
too, yep. right? And yep, so I yep. think, you know, let's, I mean, we can also look, if we're talking about, you know, artistry and creativity, to also look at all these sabotage judges that want to walk into the room when we start to really hit home as far as our innocence and our purity and our truthfulness yep. and our honesty, right? Yep. Including, and it is pretty amazing. I mean, we're dealing with huge amounts of depression and massive amounts of, you know, again, cancer and sadness and tons of stuff. And yet we're constantly counting steps, counting calories. You know, I was saying to a friend the other day, amazing. I mean, thousands of years, people have been baking bread and very happy. And now, too, we get these ideas of no bread. No bread is bad for you. No bread. And then again, yeah, I mean, no smoking or no drinking or, you know, and well, I think that
we're in such a culture of deprivation instead of abundance.
Yeah, and just I think there, you know, there were people sharing tobacco, and it's like we should just be celebrating. We're in a body. I mean, that's a miracle in itself that we even landed on Earth and incarnated exactly. and are walking with 2 feet. And so, yep. if we end up being responsible and creative and everything else, then it's all good, right? It's all good.
Absolutely.
Talk to us a little. Yeah.
Go ahead. No, you have me here.
No, I wanted to get this, you know, a little bit about creative alchemy. I mean, this magical thing that artists are able to take sorrow, take grief, maybe also take bliss, orgasmic moments or exciting things, and they're able to mix it and transform it. And if I look at the amount of denial in this moment in the world and the amount of numbness, do we have a chance if we would realize it's not going to work just to talk about, you know, it's not going to work to talk about and talk about and talk about and talk about how concerned we are with the planet or how concerned we are with the politics. But if we look from as an artist, how can we shift harm to harmony? How can we shift violence to vibrance? How can we use our word, the power of word, to literally become the alchemists or be the alchemists that we are, the creative beings that we are?
You know, I used to start the workshop by saying we're alchemists. We can turn tiny murders, sorrow, grief, all the horrible stuff that's happened to us, we can turn it into something beautiful. We can paint it, we can dance it, we can sing it. And mm-hmm. in here, in my workshop, we're going to write it. And but the most important part of that equation is, first, you have to feel it. You can't skip the sorrow. You can't mm-hmm. skip the feeling part. And everybody wants to go from this to the product, this to success. And you have to slog through the mud. No mud, no lotus, right?
Right.
You are not
right.
going to have anything great until you have gone down into the muck as deep as you can go. So anyway, I always started the workshop that way. And my son, 10 years ago, my son was 6. He got diabetes at 9 months old. And at 22, he got MS. And he was a very angry, you know, we did everything wrong you could ever do with a chronically ill kid. And he was angry and why me, screaming, I'm going to kill myself, everything. And he ultimately became absolutely beautiful. He transformed into a teacher and surrendered and became gorgeous. And he did die 10 years ago. But the day after he died, thank you, I didn't really have the kind of response that I should have had, or I shouldn't should on myself, but I had a very interesting response. I kind of put it away somewhere. And then a girlfriend of mine, I woke up with a backache and I was making mm-hmm. jokes saying, dance at my back. And then a girlfriend of mine offered me a drumming workshop in Florida. Then she paid for the ticket. She paid for the workshop. And so I flew down, left my husband, flew down to Florida. And by the time I got off the plane, my back was killing me. And then I sat in a really weird, you know, on a zafu, on a pillow for 10 days, drumming. By the time I got home, I was flat on my back. The back was frozen. It was unbelievable pain. Mm-hmm. And I had books under my head, like the Alexander technique. I had chiropractic. I went to acupuncture. I even read a book on anger in the back, lying there. And one day, after about 11 days of being miserable, I'm lying there and I'm hearing myself teaching. We're alchemists. We can transform our pain, our sorrow, into art, into music. And here we're going to do it in writing. But the most important part of the equation is, first you have to, oh my God, the teacher has to feel it. I started laughing and then sobbing and sobbing and sobbing and wailing and punching the floor. And 2 days later, my backache was gone. I am a big proponent of tears, big proponent of sobbing. Get it out of your body and onto the page. Get the rage on the page. Get the sorrow on the page. You're walking around holding it together like you think if you cry, you'll never stop crying, like you think you're going to embarrass yourself, like you think it's a disease that you have sorrow. Everybody has a broken heart. Let the stuff out of your body, and I swear you'll be so much lighter. Don't worry, new shit's coming. You know, you don't have to worry about emptying out, because it's always a new thing that's going to happen to you. So I'm a big fan of sobbing. And honestly, now when I start the workshop, we're alchemists, we turn shit into gold. I know what I'm talking about.
That's true. It's like the fertilizer for the fields, right?
I always say it's also. There you go. I just want to tell a quick story about Dan, just because I told you that he was angry. So he was screaming, why me, why me, why me, for years. Now, what is a mother supposed to say? Do I have an answer for that? Why me? Why? I lost this. I lost that. And the last 3 years of his life, he really surrendered, and he became very sweet, and he was bedridden and everything else. So I went down to his room, to his house one day, and I walked into the room, and I said, all right, I got one for you. You can't walk. Your hands tremor, so you can't do your insulin shot. You got two bed sores the size of golf balls. Your girlfriend left you. Dan, I just want to know why you. There was the perfect pregnant pause, and he goes, why not me? I said, okay, you gurued. I'm calling Dad. I mean, that was the most beautiful realization that he actually came to that. Exactly. Why not you? What, you're special? It was so beautifully wise, and that, you know, so our last 3 years were very beautiful, and I wanted to say that, because when I talk about how horrible he was the first several years of his life, because we kind of, you know, let him get away with stuff, he ruled the roost, it ended up that he became our teacher.
Beautiful. Yeah, you talk also in your book exactly about that. You talk about hurting, and you say we hurt because we don't live real. Because if we were living the truth, we wouldn't let any of those abuses in our world happen. I mean, I think that's important, whether we're going through, you know, people that we love that are very, very sick, or whether it's our society that is not functioning. But we also, and I'm sure you would say that maybe in the first few years, you were. I'm assuming, I'm projecting now the another P that we can throw into the conversation, but
a whole lot of P
feeling
going.
P. Okay, I can't say that on radio. But anyway.
I think in America it's called the golden shower. But go ahead.
Yeah. Exactly. But I mean, you probably felt also guilty in some ways to really talk honest, hard talk.
Absolutely. And I would talk to myself and say, you know, you didn't do this and you can't fix this. But I became a fixer. I became a professional fixer, man. I got goji berries. When I give you the list of the things that I got for him, mainly it was because I couldn't stand my pain. I wasn't being unselfish. It wasn't because he was in pain. I couldn't stand the pain. When I came to that realization, I didn't like myself very much. That was tough. You know?
And that is this thing about being, again, the honesty, understanding our hurt is real.
Yeah.
What would you say, you know, this is a question that happens a lot. People are ready to go into the hurt. They're ready to go into the pain. But then suddenly it you know, they either feel like it's like quicksand and they get pulled under and they can't get up again. Because once you start opening that deep, you know, the stuff that we've repressed for so long, it can be very, very scary for someone to really start sobbing. They can feel like they're losing, you know, the ground beneath their feet. So is this why groups are so important? What would you...
Yes.
Right?
Even just one writing partner. If you can't get into a group of five, then if you just had one writing partner or a best friend, somebody that is going to, you say to them, I'm going to be having a breakdown. I don't know how long it's going to take. Do you think you can be there for me? And you might want to line up three or four people because it's going to be a lot of work for them to have to hold you psychically. But yes, you absolutely are making a commitment to your healing. And if you're going to make a commitment to your healing, that means you're going to have a broken heart. And if you're going to have a broken heart, it means you're going to walk around in a daze and you're going to hurt. But turning it into something beautiful is the end result. Know that. Know you're going to take this energy and you're going to take, because you're going to be empty. You won't have to carry this around anymore. It's marinating in there. And as soon as you start to let it out, and you get this shit onto the page or wherever you're going to, even if you're just on the rug sobbing, you're not carrying it anymore. And you're carrying a very heavy, heavy weight. I have to tell a
heavy
story.
Tell a story.
I know time is going to go. So I started filming Dan because there was a point, he had been an acting major in college and he was gorgeous. And I said, Dan, do you want it? This is when he was just in a wheelchair, but still sharp as a tack and still looked handsome. I said, do you want to make a film of this? That way we can, instead of being mother and son, we can be actor and director. And he said,
yes.
And because his hand was tremoring, I had to actually grab his hand and hold it. And I filmed. And I said, is there any time you want me to turn the camera off? Just tell me. He said, no, I want you to film everything. Well, he ended up getting a urinary tract infection that went onto his aortic valve, and he ended up having open heart surgery. So the day he came home from open heart surgery, his girlfriend, he almost always had a girlfriend because he was, I don't know why women like
it. So gorgeous. He was so gorgeous.
He was gorgeous.
Yeah. He's your son. Yeah.
He's my boy, but other people thought he was gorgeous as well. So there is Sarah and she's lifting him onto the bed and I'm filming and she goes, and he looks like a cadaver. He's, you know, he's just had open heart surgery. He's just home from the hospital. It's that day. And his dark, dark circles under his eyes. And she's lifting him. And she goes, oh, my God, the urine bag, it's stuck in the wheelchair. And she leans over. She's able to hold him. She's very strong. And she's able to flip the urine bag onto the bed. And I filmed everything. About 2 weeks later, I get a call from a gallery in Connecticut, where I'm from, but I don't live there anymore. And the guy says to me, Nance, we want you to come back to Hartford, get on the stage, tell your funny stories. We miss you. We want to hear all about your vineyard life, because I had moved to the vineyard year-round. And I said, no, not funny. I'm not getting on the stage. I'm crying all the time. My kid is sick. Apparently, he didn't hear me, because he continued by saying, so, line up who you want to bring. And all of a sudden, I thought, wait a minute. I have 50 hours of Dan. I can bring Dan in the wheelchair. I can show like 20 minutes. He'll get a standing ovation. So if somebody had just taken my workshop who had graduated from film school, I called her on the phone. I said, if I give you a bunch of tapes, can you get me like 15 or 20 minutes? It doesn't have to have any continuity. I just want to show it. She gives it back to me, and she has cut the part where Sarah says, oh, my God, the urine bag is stuck in the wheelchair. Why, Sarah, did she cut that?
Because there's shame around urine, even though we do it all day, all the time. Yeah,
exactly. Didn't want to embarrass Dan, didn't want to make people uncomfortable. Can I tell you that if you are writing a memoir or you are writing a personal narrative or you are writing your own book about your own story, the urine bag is the story. Do not cut the urine bag. That's my biggest piece of advice. You get this stuff out on the page and then, you know, maybe it shouldn't be the first sentence in the book. Maybe it has to get tucked in somewhere. Maybe your editor's going to say, you know, this story is really, really tough. Let's put this toward the end because people have to love you first. All I know is your first draft, do not hold back. Do not sit there and say, oh, my God, I can't say that. They'll really think I'm weird. Don't worry about the reader. Worry none. No worries. Just write it all.
Well, I think that's also because everybody not only can identify, but that is the kind of funny thing, right? When you go into the powder room or the ladies' room and everybody, you know, goes in, takes a pee, comes out and pretends like nobody pees. I mean, it is kind of funny, right? Looks in the mirror, well, puts on the lipstick and says, I didn't pee. Yep. It's like, well, like, okay, you know.
Oh, culturally, it's a very sad case that we're just so uptight about normal things, you know?
Yeah, it's just, that is what's happening and what is beautiful with writing, also with, you know, singing, with the arts, is to be real and to be in our bodies, which means that these things are real. We do brush our teeth and we, you know, we are in a body. We eat, we digest, we do all these things. Nancy, I just wanted to ask you, you know this because you were talking about, you know, young kids and their innocence, and you know that we all land here on the earth with a big, strong voice. And we definitely know it's our power, because if we just do a little babble of everyone's running and saying, are you hungry? Are you cold? Are you whatever? So, and we know that. And we use the voice and we use our body to get so much attention. And that's the way we survive. We need that attention. We need people to listen to us and to see us. And then suddenly, and I wanted to know your take on it, because I get people and they're like, I can't sing a tone. I cannot write. I don't know. And I'm like, wait a minute. You all came, you know, just like everyone pees. That's how it is. You all came to Earth with a big voice and you all were longing to have a command of those words, to have to, and you knew that with one word, like I'm hungry or whatever, you could stop the whole car, right? The whole car. It's like you're on vacation. Yeah, it's like, Mom, I'm hungry, or I have to go to the bathroom. And it's like your whole, you stop the car. Like it was like, well, we got to get to the airport. No, I'm hungry. Okay, so it's like we know that our voice has power. So what happens that we lose our confidence in our own voice?
Oh, you know what happens. Either your uncle took your voice away, or your teacher took your voice away, or your brother took your voice away. They get taken away very easily. We are fragile beings, especially if they attack your soul. If they attack your ego, you can probably fight back. But if they attack the thing that is you, the most you of you, it's pretty hard to reclaim that voice. It happens over and over. You know, I taught at Trinity College, which was all boys for years. And then they started to let women in, and I taught there about the second year that women were being admitted, and I taught exactly what I always teach: literature for social reflection, personal narrative, the same thing I teach in the workshop I taught in the college. And I would call on the guys and they would just read their piece, and I would call on the young women and this is what they would say: I don't think I did it right. I think this is going to sound I think this is going to sound kind of stupid, but I could not believe what I was hearing. I mean, the women's movement was over. We did it. We thought we solved everything. So Tuesdays and Thursdays the class was. So I did a Tuesday, and I heard a Thursday, and I did a Tuesday. And every single time one of those girls went, I don't think I did it right. I don't think I got the assignment right. Do I have to read? The Thursday, the third Thursday, I said, okay, I'm done. First of all, this upspeak ending with a question mark, that question mark is telling me, do I exist? Am I worthy? Mm-hmm. Should I be allowed to breathe? I don't want to hear this again. Now, here's what's going to happen, young women. When I call on you, in your mind, in your brain, in your heart, you are going to think the following thing: these people are so fucking lucky to hear my brilliance. And then you just read. Well, I got to tell you that by the end, maybe 2 weeks later, they were saying that line out loud. It became powerful. They were yelling their pieces. But, you know, how do you reclaim your voice? You got to be in a safe place.
What is creating that safe place for you? I know that. I mean, I know that because I'm also a coach, and I totally know that. And the voice is right above the heart, and it will shut down. If somebody screams at you, you know, it'll close down. It'll move towards your heart, because your heart and your lungs are the most precious things in the world. And so your voice for me is like your protector, your guardian angel, you know, something. It's a protecting force. But how, you know, people say, I read it to my mother, and then she's like, yeah, but she didn't like it. I'm like, well, what does she know about writing, or what does she know about music? So how do we know where we feel safe in such a unsafe, such an unsafe world?
It's very easy to find out where the enemies are, and where they are is where you are not. So if you have somebody that has given you criticism, that doesn't, you know, not criticism that you asked for, but criticism like, oh, I heard something just like that. Or, well, I think the grammar was off. Whatever comment you hear, do not read your beautiful, precious babies to people who are evil and who are violent. Don't do it. Surround yourself. Now, if you're in a job and you have to have a boss that's like that, what you do is you make him a character, and you're going to write him. So now you're going to memorize what you're going to write down what he says. You're going to look at the stain on his tie. You're going to look at his weird stuff that he puts in his hair. He becomes a character. He can't hurt you because he's a character in fiction. He's not real. So you protect yourself. You got to put a wall up if you have to have that job and you have to be around someone who is not safe. Other than that, socially and in your private life, pick and choose. Why would you subject yourself to someone who's mean? Don't do it. I'm busy. I can't go out Saturday. Thank you very much.
Very good. Very good advice. And if you're in a writing class and you have to be there for whatever reason, you're getting credit, do you show like half of what you are so that you can kind of protect it that way? Or do you just start writing that teacher also into a, yeah, as a belly dancer who has a party hat on her head or something? I don't know.
Oh, you're so brilliant. Honestly, you're
saggy,
you're
boobs.
You know, I think everybody's individual. I don't know if there are some people who can definitely take her and put her in a box, and there's some people who have to protect themselves till the semester's over.
Yeah, okay.
I'm sure I did when I was young. You know, now I would probably end up dropping any group or any class where I was being hurt. I'm old, and I don't need to be hurt.
Yeah, you know, that's right. That's right. You don't need that shit, even though you know it could be used for fertilizer. That's it.
That's right. Right.
That's right.
Enough around. Exactly.
That's right. Well,
flowers.
Nancy, it's been a great pleasure. Say your homepage very quickly for everybody who wants to check out Nancy's writing workshops. They are online in this moment of pandemic, but I'm sure you also have in-person workshops. I think it's Chillmark Workshop. Is that right?
It's called the Chillmark Writing Workshop.com. So Chillmark, Chillmark, which is on the vineyard, Chillmark Writing Workshop.com.
Beautiful. I thank you so much for your honesty and for giving so many people a safe place to heal their wounds, their voice wounds. And thanks for being on the show. And
you are a total joy, I will tell you. It's been
thank
a
you so much. All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Takes a chance.